Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Business Reports. I'm Gary Strubel, and every week I get to chat to the finance ghost to find out what's going on the markets. So perhaps your pension funds are invested, but certainly we are looking at African businesses. Let's start out, Ghost, with the market itself, the JSE, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, one of the more important stock exchanges in Africa, if not the most important, itself is listed. Firstly, explain how that works. And then secondly, is the JSE okay?
Hi, Gary. That was quite funny. Yeah, look, it's definitely the most important exchange in Africa. In fact, fun fact about the JSE is that it's actually one of the best exchanges in the world. So they are often rated right up there globally in terms of just capital markets infrastructure and levels of regulation and everything else. The JSE is actually such a classic example of where South Africa punches way above its weight, by any reasonable metric. And the JSE is listed on itself. So just to explain how that works, because it's always a fun one for market newbies to learn, is the JSE itself is a public company, i.e. the company that owns and operates the exchange. And so it is effectively listed on its own product, if that makes sense. So it would be a little bit like Microsoft would use Microsoft products to run Microsoft. It's basically the same story. So the stock code is JSE, which is quite funny as well. And people always enjoy learning this stuff. So I also always enjoy touching on it. So I'm glad that you did. If we actually look at the JSE itself in terms of its performance, now you might assume that with all these delistings we've seen that there's actually an issue here, but you would be wrong, because for the 6 months to June, revenue was up 11.8% and EBIT was up 15.4%. So actually some really good numbers here. Headline earnings per share up 13.4%. So full-blown double-digit growth. And that's because the JSE makes money from a wide variety of sources, ranging from effectively taking a clip on not just equity trading activity on the market, but also stuff like the regulation work that they do, all the other asset classes on there as well. You know, it's not just equities. They've got commodities, they've got other derivatives, they've got bonds, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's post-trade services, which is actually a really important source of revenue. So that's clearing and settlement, it's back office stuff. It's all of that kind of thing. So there are a bunch of services that actually make the JSE tick. And it is true that their fortunes are obviously linked to the broader market, because the reality is that when the JSE is doing well, more people are trading on our market, and therefore there's just more activity. And activity is what drives the JSE's income. So that's why when you see stuff like delistings of relatively illiquid small caps, the truth of it is that it actually makes almost no difference to the JSE's income. That's the reality of it. And I think these latest numbers actually prove that.
All right, let's talk about Nedbank. This is Nedbank as a group office, as a group business with businesses and interests through a number of African territories. Always good to look at the banks to get an idea of what's going on in the economy, and Nedbank perhaps more so than others, given relative holdings. It still looks like the bank is growing even in tough times.
Nedbank is particularly interesting because I think it really is such a pure play on South Africa. They do have some other stuff in Africa, that is true, but it is such a small proportion of Nedbank, certainly versus peers like Absa and especially Standard Bank. FirstRand's also got a lot of other stuff going on. So Nedbank lets you take a view on the macro picture in South Africa. And you might think, sure, Capitec does as well, because Capitec really is almost exclusively South African. And that's true, but I think the difference at Capitec is that it's not a macro story, it's a market share story. Capitec's share price valuation will remain hot for as long as they keep winning market share, and they seem to keep winning market share. So that's almost a different story entirely. Whereas Nedbank very much playing defense against the likes of Capitec, while also hoping for an enhanced macro picture in South Africa. And therein, unfortunately, lies the challenge. For the 6 months to June at Nedbank, revenue is up just 4%. So they're in the green, but not by a whole lot. Headline earnings per share and the interim dividend, they both grew by around 6%. And at the end of the day, the reason for that is because there was a significant improvement in the credit loss ratio. So it's not the highest quality source of earnings growth. It really wasn't. And there was actually a growth rate in expenses that bothered me as well. Operating expenses were up 9%. And remember, revenue was up just 4%. So if it wasn't for the enhancement to the credit loss ratio, they actually would have had, I think, a pretty bad period. So yes, it's great that the overall credit environment has improved in such a way that the credit loss ratio has come down into its through the cycle target range. But the point is that's now happened. It's not going to happen again. The ratio is now at a healthy level. It's not going to record another massive improvement. So from here on out, for Nedbank to grow, they need revenue to pick up and they need to keep their costs under control. And there's not a huge amount of evidence of that in the latest numbers.
Right. Switch from banking to retail, Pick and Pay, much in the news in the last 2 years or so. Terrible, terrible numbers for a while. A whole change of strategy, a recapitalization, sale, or a separate listing of Boxer. And they've released a trading update for the 17 weeks. That's to the end of June. There are some really good numbers for Pick and Pay. Are they turning the corner?
Yes, it does look as though they might be, actually, which is quite exciting for them. And obviously for the health of the retail sector as a whole, I think for South Africa and for the various markets in which Pick and Pay plays, we need competition. At the end of the day, this is food. So you want to see healthy competition. And Pick and Pay is looking a little bit better. There's still a long way to go, but the momentum looks decent. The latest update from Pick and Pay is a trading update for the 17 weeks to the 29th of June. I know it's a weird period, but that's just how it works with these retailers. It's just a voluntary update, basically. And the clothing business is by far the highlight. In their standalone Pick and Pay clothing stores, sales were up 12.5% on a like-for-like basis, which is insane, and 17.3% overall, which is also insane. Now, there is a base effect here, and the timing of the onset of winter has made a significant difference. So they have highlighted that, you know, you can expect these percentages to normalize for the rest of the year. Don't extrapolate this growth and say, oh, this is now the growth rate for Pick and Pay clothing, because that's not realistic. But it is still a solid performance, and it shows that the Pick and Pay group is actually capable of achieving things when they get the model right. We do have to mention Boxer, which is separately listed. Pick and Pay does benefit from Boxer's performance because they have a controlling stake in the group. Recent Boxer update, turnover was up 12.1%. Like-for-like sales were up 3.9%. So not an incredible set of numbers from Boxer, more driven by store expansion than like-for-like sales, but obviously Pick and Pay gets the benefit of that as well. But we now get to Pick and Pay's supermarkets themselves. And what's really interesting at Pick and Pay, and is actually highly unusual, is that we are seeing better performance from the company-owned supermarkets than from the franchise-owned supermarkets. And this goes completely against conventional wisdom, which tells us that the franchise, which is owner-managed, should be outperforming the company-owned supermarkets. But that's actually not the case. Not just in terms of overall levels, where growth rates are simply higher in company-owned, but also in terms of the trend and the momentum. So in the last three reported periods, so that's the first half of 2025, that's the financial year 2025, second half of financial year 2025, and now this latest update, Pick and Pay's company-owned supermarkets grew 3.1%, 3.6%, and then 4% respectively. So that's obviously positive momentum. It's getting better and better. Franchise-owned supermarkets, just all over the place, actually. Minus 1.4%, then up 1.1%, then up only 0.2%. So it's a bit all over the show with that. Another thing to just keep in mind with Pick and Pay, though, is because they've been closing stores, which is the mature and disciplined thing to do, by the way, and I'm glad to see them doing it, because a lot of retailers are very hesitant to do it because it means they're actively giving up market share, and far too many retail execs are obsessed with market share and not profitability. But because of the store closures, Pick and Pay's overall turnover growth is basically zero. So what's happening is that the like-for-like sales are effectively being offset by the store closures, which is interesting. So there is stuff here that is encouraging. Definitely. It's lovely to see the positive momentum in the story, and I hope it continues for their sake. And as I say, for the sake of the broader consumer sector, because we need strong grocery stores.
Let's close off then with another retailer, and that is ShopRite, who've released the trading statement for the 52 weeks to the end of June. So that's a full year of trading. And headline earnings per shares from total operations expected to be between 15% and 25% higher. Now, let's put this in context, and that is GDP growth is negligible, and we are still suffering from a number of price shocks in the South African environment and a number of disruptions of business type problems. How are ShopRite able to do these sorts of numbers?
Gary, that is an excellent question, because honestly, I don't actually know anymore how they are able to do these numbers, because to your point, GDP growth is essentially non-existent, really. And yes, the trading for the 52 weeks to June 2025 is compared against the 52 weeks to June 2024, which certainly includes lots of disruptions like load shedding, et cetera, et cetera. So headline earnings per share will benefit from stuff like that, not really being in this period, but firmly in the base. So, you know, fair enough, we take that into account. But when we see numbers like, for example, Checkers and Checkers Hyper growing sales by 13.8%, that's not because of load shedding. That's because they are just managing to win market share all the time from basically everybody else. And Woolworths Food is actually not doing too badly at the moment. So it is incredible to me that both of them can be doing so well. Checkers and Checkers Hyper is growing faster than Woolworths, so they are winning market share. But as I say, I don't think it's hugely at the expense of Woolworths. So perhaps actually we're starting to see the better situation in South Africa around interest rates and overall consumer sentiment actually starting to filter through into some of these retailers, particularly in the food businesses that are focused on higher income consumers. But I think where ShopRite's going to need to be careful is ShopRite and USave, so in other words, the ShopRite banner itself and their USave business, were only up 5.9%. And that's not super exciting. So there they have very strong competition from the likes of Boxer. And that's where investors will need to be careful in overpaying for ShopRite's shares, because this is the really fun thing about the markets, is that ShopRite's share price has not really rewarded investors nearly as much as they thought it was going to in recent times, because it is so fully valued. Hilariously, over the past year, you would have been way better off investing in Pick and Pay than in ShopRite. Now, obviously, if you look over 5 years, it's a very, very, very different story. But it's a good reminder that your investment success is not just what you buy, but very much what you paid for it as well. Now, obviously, ShopRite can't control their share price. All they can really do is keep growing their business, and they certainly are growing their business. The last thing that I just want to mention, because I think it's quite an incredible lens on modern demographics, for want of a better description, they have opened 60 new Pet Shop Science stores. Takes them to 144 stores. Their baby brand, Little Me, opened just one more store to get to 11 stores. That tells you something about where the growth is right now if you look across, frankly, more humans running around versus more fluffy, cute things that everyone has in their home. There's huge growth in pets at the moment at a time when the birth rate has slowed down dramatically. And ShopRite sees this, and you can see them investing straight into that trend by opening up all these Pet Shop Science stores. We saw Woolworths acquire Absolute Pets. So again, the market leaders in the space, Woolworths, ShopRite, etc., they can invest for growth at the moment, whereas the likes of Pick and Pay that we spoke about earlier, they have to just survive. They basically need to just try and turn the business around. So that's why in the short term, you might see some quite interesting numbers coming out of the likes of Pick and Pay, and the share price will reward those who have a punt. But long term, it still feels like ShopRite and Woolworths are just pulling away and building a really strong business around food and grocery, in which I would include pets, for example, and just these areas of growth. It really is interesting to follow this sector.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Appreciate your inputs, thoughts, and wisdom as always. We'll leave you to float off amongst the corporate halls. We'll be back next week, though. Remember that if you did hear something that was interesting and you wanted to perhaps listen to the whole episode or the whole segment, you can go to wherever you pick up your podcasts, Apple, Android, or Spotify, and you can go and like and subscribe. That would be amazing. Thank you very much. And thank you for making us Namibia's number one business podcast. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week with more Ghost Biz.